In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And today we're going to talk a little bit more about James's vinyl experience.
If we didn't have enough last episode, we will definitely have enough now. No, I actually,
you were telling me a little bit about this, and I am 100% there, because I was kind of like, I feel partially responsible.
A little bit about this?
Yeah, I would say a little bit, quote unquote. I say that, I paraphrase, or maybe that's not even the proper terminology. I'm playing it down a little bit, okay?
Don't play it down a little bit, because you were more than a little bit involved in this. You heard more than a little bit about this. Between you and my wife, you dealt with nearly a full-on breakdown from James over vinyl records.
I feel so bad. When you were telling me about what was happening, it was like, no! There's no way, dude. There's no way. After all of the stuff that I figured out, that I had learned, and I was trying to pass that knowledge on to you about it, I felt so bad when you were encountering those problems that I first encountered, because I tried to set you up with what would avoid those issues.
Well, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. I jumped the gun on something, which is something I try not to do. I caution other people about doing. And when I've done this before many different times, believe me, when we went and got the Mini, for example. The day we went and got the Mini, I told the story of the Mini on here and the breakdown of my wife's van in the process of getting the Mini and us basically having no car to go home in. So I wasn't even sure about signing on to the Mini, but I did it anyway. And I felt in that moment this existential issue that I felt this last week dealing with this record thing. Because one of the things I've kind of done within my life is, especially as I've gotten older, because I made many, many mistakes in my youth. Many, we all did. One of the mistakes I would make commonly is I'd see something I liked, I'd think how cool it was, and I'd buy it, only to find out later that it was not the best version of the thing that I could have bought. I ended up getting a lesser version of something, just because I couldn't. I didn't do any research. I didn't find out about things. I just immediately reacted. And then it became something that I started making myself say no to a lot of things and doing tons and tons of research before I got into anything, especially when I was buying anything or involving myself in anything new. I can remember the first guitar that I bought, admittedly. It's a guitar that I loved, and up until I got my ESP guitar, my Kirk Hammett one, I had been longing for that guitar again, because I made two mistakes with that guitar. The first one was, I bought that guitar, at the time I had a three-quarter size acoustic guitar that I had bought out of the JCPenney catalog. That was the only guitar that I had.
What year was that? Like 1982?
1997.
They were still selling guitars out of the JCPenney catalog in 1997?
Yes, and it was something that I shopped. I shopped Christmas out of.
I mean, we're not that far removed from like Guitar Center showing up and like, say, I know you weren't in the Sacramento area per se, but they were just starting to like come up, you know?
Let me get there.
Yeah.
At the time, the only thing I had available was the JCPenney catalog, because my mother had a JCPenney card. What I found out years later is one of the ways that she was able to do Christmas as big as she did is she had her JCPenney card that she would buy all of Christmas on and then spend the whole year paying it off and then buy Christmas again on the JCPenney card. So the JCPenney catalog was our Christmas list. We would go through and circle the things in the JCPenney catalog that we wanted so my mom could get them from there.
That's dope.
That's how Christmas happened.
Cool. Yeah,
so
great.
I remember that senior year of high school, I wanted a guitar. That was the only thing I could afford. It was like a $60 guitar, and I bought a $60 pair of shoes through there, Arizona brand shoes. They were knockoff Vans skate shoes, but they were the only ones I could afford.
Yeah, cool.
So I get out of high school, I start into college, I start getting credit cards, start getting credit for things, and I come across a wonderful magazine that has more instrumentation stuff, Musician's Friend.
Oh, and wow.
I buy an Ibanez RG270 guitar out of that, and an amp that was by the brand name was Prime.
For the amp
that I bought.
I don't even know.
The amp was a piece of shit.
I was going to say, the amp sounds like a beginner brand, just like shoebox piece.
It was actually a pretty big amp.
Like Prime and Crate. Crate was one of those companies that did that. They sold high-level shit, but most of the stuff that everybody remembers from Crate is like, you know, the little tiny shoebox guys.
This wasn't a shoebox one. This was a good, like, you know, 24 to 30 inch wide by, you know, about 16 inch high. It may have even been a dual speaker one. It was a single speaker, but a big fucking speaker. It was a pretty decent amp, I thought, but it was shit. All the wiring was bad, and I'm not a soldering guy, so yeah, it barely worked. The guitar had issues with the connection. I used to have to, the screw holes would come loose, so I had to stick matchsticks in there and screw the stuff back in to hold it in place. But it was a really fun guitar to play, and I went and traded it in one day. So the first mistake I made was getting those, because they ended up costing me a lot of money. The amp was crap. I didn't try it out. I didn't play it. I got lucky that I enjoyed playing that guitar, but I didn't try the things out. I didn't do research. I just saw these things, thought they looked cool, bought them. Same thing when I got rid of that amp, got another amp, a little, you know, an Ibanez, like, I don't know, little tiny one, that one of the shoebox style ones, little small one.
Yeah.
Well, a little small square one. Like the 15 or something like that. Anyway, yeah. I was thinking I was going to get, you know, something for the guitar. I ended up trading the guitar in, straight trading it for a Epiphone Special 2.
Nice. Okay.
Which is just a piece of garbage.
Well, I mean, no, the Special 2 has been kind of synonymous. It's another beginner guitar, but the RG, which RG model did you have? The RG 1 series?
270.
270. Yeah, 2 series. A little higher up, but did that one have the Floyd on it, or was it a standard bridge?
Yes.
Had a Floyd?
Had a Floyd. It had the it had double pickups with a single in the middle. I mean,
it's an HSH. It was nice. Yeah, I was gonna say it's an HSH. You know, I actually did a downgrade as well. I had a Jackson, that was like we all make mistakes, man. I had the guitar I got when I was 16. My first electric guitar was, I think you may have even seen it, because I traded for a different guitar while I was working with Blockbuster.
It was your Van Halen wannabe, right?
Yep. It was white on one. So if you're looking at the front of the guitar and it was sitting vertical, it was white on the right side and then black on the left side. And then in the middle, it had this very, you know, Van Halen, I say Van Halen wannabe, quote unquote, because that's what my dad was thinking when he bought it. He was like, ooh, that's kind of Van Halen-y, you know, because I was really into Van Halen when I was a kid. And it had this weird, like, road cone orange, like warm orange Thunderbolt in the middle of it. It looked a lot more Poison than Van Halen. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't hot pink, yeah, but it was like something that looked like it'd be sitting on side stage ready for the, you know, the tech to hand a CC DeVille or something, you know? However, on the guitar, it was just full of knobs and switches. Shit, I didn't even know it was doing. And it turned out that the guitar that I had before I knew what it was, I traded it in for a Jackson Charvel, which is now, Charvel was its own company that I didn't know about, and I had a Charvel before. And then I purchased a Jackson Charvel, or a Charvel by Jackson, which was, Charvel was its own company, and then Jackson purchased Charvel. Now, Fender owns the company Jackson. But the Jackson that I had is very similar to your RG. It looks very much like a Steve Vai type model, minus the little hand grip on the body. It is an HSH guitar. It has a pick guard on the top of it. It was a three-way switch, and it had a Floyd Rose on it. And I fucking hated that Floyd Rose. But I picked it up because I thought that Floyd Rose was like, oh, that's the kind of guitar that I want. I want to play, like, yeah. I'm like 19, 20 years old. I want to play Kirk Hammett riffs now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you want to dive bomb that shit.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be able to do that. Now, here's where, I don't know anybody who is listening to this may possibly know much about Charvel guitars versus the Jackson stuff. And I'm not saying one company is better than the other one. However, the one that I got rid of, I found out, and I'm not entirely positive what it is because I can't fucking find the guitar anymore. I can find similar models. The one that I had was another HSH model, but it was a solid front guitar. It had a humbucker, single HSH's humbucker on the neck, single in the middle, humbucker on the bridge. This one was
for
actually...
For people who don't understand, if you're looking at the pickups, the things on the front of the guitar underneath the strings on an electric guitar,
yeah,
if it looks like there's two mashed together and then one by itself in the middle and two more mashed together, that's the two mashed together are the humbucker. The one by itself is the single. That one makes sense.
Yep.
And then the other one's a humbucker.
Yes.
Just for those who don't understand... what the guitar lingo part of things, that's what he's referring to. Go on,
yes.
Please.
Now, the ones that I have, though, the humbuckers, they were, like, covered. They looked like what were called EMG pickups, EMG-style pickups, which you don't see the open coils. You just see this nice, sleek cover over the top. Nice black block right there. But the crazy thing I had that I didn't know, and I didn't know how any of them worked, was there were four switches on the body of the guitar near where the jack was and the pickup switch and the knobs. There were four switches that I had for that piece. Those four switches were doing things like changing phase and doing stuff with like pickup polarity. Shit I didn't even know, but this is like, essentially this is like Jimmy Page level bullshit. And I know that sounds, I know James, you're not going to really, you're not going to really be into this part of it, but essentially,
no, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Like those knobs and switches, man, they change the voicing of the pickup. And so you get something that could sound like anything from anywhere. You're depending on the amp and what you're doing with the pickups and all the shits. Basically it's a large tonal palette besides what a regular Strat or a Les Paul can do, far beyond that.
Well, and to add to that, you know, I know I've discussed with you the guitars that I have,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that you remember necessarily all of them, and you shouldn't because they're my guitars.
Right.
But I can say I have a Epiphone Les Paul.
Yes.
I have the KH. Mm-hmm. I have a really old Squire Strat. That actually still sounds really, really good.
Nice.
I thought about upgrading pickups and that, but it actually sounds really good. And it plays wonderfully. Just an ugly, beat up blue thing. It's amazing. And then I have an Ibanez Artcore semi hollow body. And the reason, the thing that you know from this, because you can visualize all these guitars,
uh-huh.
you've done work on the Les Paul for me, so you know that guitar probably more intimately than all the other ones.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen a couple of the KHs. You haven't seen mine personally, but you've seen a couple of the KHs.
Yes.
in your work.
Yes. Yes, I have.
The reason I got all of those individual guitars
mm-hmm.
is because each one of those guitars plugged into the exact same amp on the exact same settings,
mm-hmm.
each guitar sounds different. You can play the same shit on each guitar, same person playing it, so you're getting the hand feel and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those guitars, because of how they're built, the pickups in them, what those pickups are designed to pick up for sound, the mm-hmm. tonal qualities of the guitar themselves, each sounds different, and my goal with that was to have what that guitar has the capability of doing and what people do, especially a lot now with the different computerized things that you can do to change your guitar tone, besides all the different things that amps and preamps and effects boards and all that can do, is I wanted to have each one have their own different tone so that if I was recording my own music and mm-hmm. I laid down four different guitar tracks on a song, I had four different guitars to lay it down with. So even if I don't know how to do all of the different stuff with the computer programs and all of the different stuff with, mm-hmm. you know, changing settings on everything, whatever else I have, I had four different tonal sounds right from the get-go that I could work with these four different guitars. And that was my entire purpose, was to have that capability. Sounds like this guitar had the ability to mimic that kind of thing within the same guitar just by those switches changing what the pickups do.
Essentially, yes, that was the features of it. But one of the things that I ended up finding out was that all of these knobs and all of these switches were specific to a certain model guitar. And to this day, I have not been able to fully find a reasonable copy of that wasn't like a super, like, basically what I did was I traded this guitar in. I found out what the model was after. It is a Charvel, I think it's a Charvel Model 3 or Model 4 guitar. Have never been able to see it again, but I have seen multiple different types of bodies that are very similar to it, similar to the style that I've gone and looked for. But essentially, what this means is I'm never going to find this guitar again. It was a much higher grade guitar than the one I ended up trading for because I was a fucking idiot. And it's probably something that I've just completely missed out on. But funny enough, the reason why I was talking to you about your Epiphone, your Special 2, it's not so much about, like, I have, like, my own personal regret, but that's because my dad gave me that guitar. That was a sentimental value thing. It doesn't have to do with the actual, like, monetary worth or anything. It has to do with what that meant to me at that time. That's the reason why it was a mistake. However, what you're telling me as far as what you're trading for, dude, if there is anything I can tell you, and I have a ton of guitars, guitars that I have built, guitars that my family has built, stuff that I bought right out, old used music shops that are specific to that type. You know, I've got like a B-grade Epiphone Les Paul that I use that I gigged on for years, and I still own it, and I still keep it up, and it still plays fantastic. But what I'm getting at is that a lot of people put a lot of money, a lot of worth into like where the guitar is from or what kind of bullshit that is. And honestly, it comes down to whether or not it works for you. And I have seen extremely decent, very well-made guitars from companies that are lower grade, like Epiphone or even like those beginner type guitars that play fantastically, that sound fantastic. And sometimes they can sound even better with a light bit of modification if you decide to do that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that the guitar in and of itself is a bad piece. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, this guitar was a piece of shit.
The thing was,
I had played, I'd recorded two songs in a band. Right before I met my wife, they kicked me out of the band because they thought I was too dark. I made my own band. That's how I met my wife. Great story there. But on one of the songs I played bass. The other song I played guitar. I had written the other song. And okay. I played guitar. One guy played, one of the brothers in the group played drums. The other one played keyboards to go with it, doing kind of bass line on the keyboards. We had our singer sing the lyrics that I had written. We recorded the song on a 4-track recorder, just the four of us playing in a bedroom.
Cool.
It was beautiful. It was fantastic. Sadly, that was one of the tapes I lost when I lost my container of tapes with my S&M cassette tape in it.
I lost the tape of the
one song I recorded.
Yeah.
But you
played that for me years ago too, off that tape.
Mm-hmm. I played their Epiphone Les Paul with that, and I was thinking the Epiphone Special I was getting was going to be something like playing that Les Paul, because that Les Paul was beautiful to play. That thing was fucking amazing. I loved playing it. The sound, the feel of it, it was just beautiful, and it was a piece of garbage. I eventually got my Epiphone Les Paul, and I love my Epiphone Les Paul. It plays beautifully, and it's one of the ones I love just having fun with that thing, because it's beautiful. I don't pretend like I can shred on that one. I pretend like I can shred on the KH. I can't, but I pretend to. But you know, these decisions happen. There were many times I regretted jumping into things. So many times. So I started doing research on things. I started not jumping in before I did a bunch of research. And I would research things to death. I would go back and forth. I would spend weeks deciding on things. It took me 2 years. 2 years to buy, more than that. I'm sorry. 4 years. It took me 4 years to buy an Xbox One. 4 years of going over and over and over to justify purchasing an Xbox One. I'm one of the best video game purchases I ever made, because we use that thing so much more for an entertainment center thing for us than we even use for video games, but even the video game usage for the family, for the household, one of the best things I've ever bought in my entire life. But it took me 4 years to decide to buy that because I think about these things so much, think about them so much. Well, when the record thing came up, you had talked to me. I was, you know, you had talked to me before about your experience with the records. If you were still in the midst of your experience and trying to figure it out, you'd just gone through the experience of the suitcase, but it didn't, you know, you weren't happy with the suitcase and all the things that you were going through. And, you know, I was there in the store.
Yeah.
I got the records. I got this possible record player. You're like, yeah, that one should be great. That one should be great.
Yeah.
Because it's the brand. It's the Audio Technica brand, which is a good brand. Believe me, all the research I've done in the last week has told me there are a few brands that are really good. Sony obviously is good at almost everything they do. But one of the leaders in the industry when it comes to record players is Audio Technica.
Mm-hmm.
They are one of the better brands. I mean, top 10 rated, of the top 10 rated ones I was looking at that are like, you know, under $1,000, like three or four out of the top 10 on multiple lists from multiple sites.
Yeah.
Three or four of them are Audio Technica brands.
Absolutely.
Including the kind of the brother to the brand that I got. The brand that I got was the ATLPGO. See, I've learned a lot over the last week. ATLPGO.
Yes.
Now, the ATLPGO is analogous to the ATLP60.
Yes.
Okay. But the GO is a specific color scheme. It's kind of a gray color scheme as opposed to a white or black scheme, which is the other options that you can get.
Man, I believe it's exclusive to where you picked it up too, right?
The ATLP-GO, or we'll just call it the GO. The GO is only sold at Walmart. It is a Walmart exclusive player.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
And it does get good reviews. However, one of the things that does come up in the reviews is the fact that on certain musically dynamic records, it does have a tendency to skip.
Really? No. Wow. Okay. You didn't. Okay. So funny enough,
this is something I found out recently.
Wow. I'll be damned. Cause I remember you were just like, shit. Okay. You know what? I want you to tell this story. I want you to tell this part of the story. I can tell my part of the story after you tell your part of the story, because I think it was really interesting, especially with what I was going through to try to help you, because I knew what you were looking for as a beginner and I was trying not to overwhelm you. So you please go and you please talk about what you learned, and then I can supplement that.
So I got the record player. Last week we talked about me getting the record player and I was so happy. I'm listening to all these records until I get to the one record that you had problem with too.
Yep. And I think I talked about Metallica's, it on the show too. I did.
Yeah. Metallica's Garage Inc.
Yep.
And specifically in the exact same songs that you had problems with. And I started reading because I'm looking up, is there an issue with this album? Because you had the problems with it too, even though you fixed it with a different record player. I'm trying to find out, is there issues with this album? There's people that are complaining about skipping in the same places. But as I'm diving deeper into the research, and it's skipping through the song Helpless multiple times.
Yep.
The song Small Hours multiple times. Die, Die, My Darling was like a major one. Yep. Always skipping through Die, Die, My Darling.
Yep.
And so, and these, most of these, many of these are the first song on the album, but even throughout, I had to stop it. Helpless, it skipped like five times, and I was like, oh my god, I need to stop this and see what happens with the Small Hours. Beginning of Small Hours, it just kept skipping all over the place. I had to turn it off.
Oh,
and
man.
I was just like, oh my god, what is going on here? And I start going through this crisis of, I bought this player because this was supposed to be a better quality player. It's supposed to be decent. Let me rephrase. It's supposed to be the best quality for the price at a beginner level with the full size platter instead of the smaller platter.
Yeah.
That doesn't have the wobble, which, by the way, if I remember correctly, you said that you could play the Garage Inc. on the smaller platter one, the suitcase one, and didn't have any issue.
Right. Okay. So yeah, my,
do you know why?
Probably because of that wobble, probably because of the weight offset that was happening to that record because it's on a smaller platter.
The wobble actually, because as we discussed, what's happening with this, and I had to do this deep dive on research. While I'm doing this deep dive on research, I'm having a bit of a meltdown because I had already had difficulty getting into this, one, because of the expense, two, because I know who I am, and I know that now that I have a new hobby collecting shit, that, I mean, when I finally gave in after years and years and years of fighting it, after years and years of pressure from all of my friends that I played Dungeons & Dragons with back in junior high school. And I'm talking years of pressure for this, because these are guys that were Dungeons and Dragons guys in high school. And then as all the new stuff came out, they got into eventually got into like World of Warcraft, and they tried to get me into that. I refused, and I've still refused to stay out of that. I will not do it. The wife will divorce me if I ever get involved.
Fucking 20 years later, that shit's still active. I can't believe it.
But there was another thing that came out in the 90s that all of my D&D friends went into. In fact, one of my good D&D friends, I didn't talk to him for years. We reconnected a few years ago. He's the one that I think I've told you about. He works for the devil, or at least he did work for the devil. He may work for a different company now.
Ah, yes.
He actually got so heavy into this that he became a professional judge at tournaments for this.
Really?
Magic the Gathering.
Yes.
And I resisted Magic the Gathering for years and years and years. And finally, when I jumped into it, oh man, I almost lost myself. I spent so much money. And I have a bookcase, a short bookcase, not a big one, but a short bookcase full of cards. And I think I have about 95 decks that I have built.
Holy shit.
For Magic the Gathering.
You know what? I don't know if I have told you this, but Tash has gotten into collecting Pokemon cards now. That's for her, it's the collector's portion of it. She doesn't play the cards. She doesn't play the game. She just collects the cards. And she started with one specific series. I think she completed a couple of other series along the way, but she started doing that too, which is fine because now I'm collecting records. And what's funny is, the cost can, depending upon what you're picking up, turn out to be relatively about the same. So I really, it's nice to be able to be like, oh, I'm going to go look for, hey, look, I found this Hendrix record, or hey, look, I found a Toto record or something. And she's like, hey, I found a Radiant Charizard card or something like that. And they're both around the same cost. So I don't really necessarily find it to be that big of a deal, but I do find it funny that the card. Did you get into it for card collecting, or did you get into it for playing the cards? Right. You're playing? Yeah. 90, did you say 96 and, decks?
Hmm?
Did you say 96? What? Is that how many decks you have?
95, 90, somewhere between 95 and 100, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I love to be able to play with people who are not total dicks about it, because that's definitely, it's one of those areas where you have complete assholes when they're playing super competitive. You think that super competitive people are only in sports? No, no, no. They are definitely in nerd culture and definitely in Magic the Gathering. They are complete little dickholes. Basically half the people that you will probably encounter at any kind of a Magic the Gathering tournament, or even like a Friday Night Magic at a local comic shop that does that kind of stuff, half of the people there are going to be little Eric Cartmans. Seriously. Total douche holes. And so, you know, I got into that, stepped back from that once it became too much of an issue. You know, I've always had my Star Wars collecting. It's gotten worse over the years to the point where I've had to stop some of that. I knew this would be something that once I got into collecting, I would go full bore on it. I would spend way too much money on it. I would be hunting things out for it. And so I was cautious. I was nervous. I was scared to get into it. I've been fighting it for years. And I wasn't fighting getting into records because, oh, I hate vinyl. So many things are so much better. It was literally, I know me as a collector. And I know that it's going to be a hassle for me. I know it's going to be something that will become consuming for me. And so, I still did it. I bit the bullet. I did it. But now, it was such a difficult thing for me to agree to do.
Yeah.
It felt so weird. And I jumped into it. I didn't spend time thinking about it. I haven't been thinking for the last 2 or 3 years, man, at some point I might want to start collecting records. Man, I want to do it. It's literally, my wife finds the chipmunks. My wife finds load. and all the other ones. And you're going to be, you need to do this now. This is the universe telling you need to do it. It's like, and normally she gets me with, cause she's learned, I've explained this on here, but she's learned the way to get me to get involved in something, to get behind something. She will do tons of research on it and then hit me with the research, because she knows that that's what I love. Yeah. That's what makes me feel safe and secure getting into something, is research. When we bought a fridge, man, I spent 6 months deciding which fridge to buy. And our fridge was in the process of dying, and I waited till our fridge basically died to get the fridge. Because I searched all over the place. I searched every possible way we could get a fridge. I mean, we had to do it on payments because we ain't got no money to plop down, you know, any kind of real money on a fridge. We even bought, I think at one point it may have been like a year, because I think our fridge died and we spent like $80 on a used fridge that worked for another like 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. I took forever to buy a fridge. I took a long time even choosing out the mini, even though I felt like I was kind of pushed into it on the night of. I'm glad for it because I love my mini, and I will probably do my best to only drive minis as my personal vehicle for the rest of my life. I absolutely love my car, but I did tons of research on it before I got it. Even before that day where I felt like I was pushed into it, I had done 3 or 4 months of research on what kind of car I wanted. It had come down to three cars and three different styles of car. And when I showed them to my wife, she's like, no, really? You want a mini? Okay. Like, well, you said no to the other two, so all right. That's kind of the one I wanted, but I figured you'd say no to that one for it being too frivolous. We're good. But the other two she thought were ugly, and I'm like, okay, that makes sense. I just figured they were good for gas mileage, and she'd be more willing to let me get one that had the better gas mileage than the mini. I ended up getting the one I really wanted, and I'm happy with it. And I even went between the different styles of mini, and I knew that there were specific things that I wanted in my mini. Mm-hmm. And I got almost all of them. I didn't get a backup camera, but that's all right. I can live with that one. I can look over my shoulder.
Well, you also can just purchase a backup camera and put it onto it as well. So
I don't want to do that. Then I have to modify it. I love my car as it is. No modifications.
Understood. Rear view mirror it is, sir.
No, the rear view mirror is completely fucking worthless in that car.
Is it really?
Absolutely worthless. It's very tiny, and because of the it's got barn doors in the back. So basically there's a big pillar in the middle of your rear view. Rear view mirrors are worthless. I learned how to drive on a pickup truck that had a camper shell on it, so you couldn't use your rear view mirror anyway. I'm used to using the side mirrors. Hmm. I learned to drive that way. So side mirrors and look over your fucking shoulder. I'm good. It's a small fucking car. So it's not like it's a giant, it's the van that we have where the backup camera is useful, because you literally can't see anything out the back of that damn van. Mm-hmm. Not a thing. So having a backup camera, you kind of need it because you can't see shit. So, you know, it makes sense. But anyway, I felt like I had jumped into the record thing, and I was, like I said, I resisted it for so long. I didn't want to start collecting those things. I didn't want to put the money in. Because I knew it would happen. I knew I'd end up going nuts for it. And it went nuts because this last weekend before the debacle happened with Garage Inc. Because I'd waited on Garage Inc. Before the debacle happened with Garage Inc. Of course, I'm out shopping again that last weekend. And what do we find? We're at another Walmart and we find like four other Metallica records.
I know.
Actually, that's when I found Garage Inc. Because I didn't have Garage Inc. before that.
Right.
So I get all these. I get the Garage Inc. in. I start playing it. And what happens? Skipping, right?
Yep.
So I send Mike messages, of course.
Oh, yeah. As soon as you sent me that, I was like, oh, my God. His heart has to be broken.
Here's the first one. Here's the first thing that I send. Garage Inc. Side A skipped. Side B of first record skipped too.
Yeah, that's what starts happening. Is I actually checked all the discs on when I did my second or third copy. Started skipping. And I was like, "Fuck!" And it skips at exactly the same spot over and over again. And that's why I was just like, "Is this a problem with the press?" Like I turned in three copies before I realized it was my player. But please continue.
Well, and this is the, you know, Mike's response. He comes back. I think he had some Scooby snacks. No rucking way. He apologizes for the Scooby snacks, and then that's a total shock. But it shouldn't be a shock. It shouldn't have been a shock at all. And so I'm like,
well,
yeah,
it did. It okay. So it was and it wasn't. And the reason why it was to me was, first off, I knew that you were trying to, everything that I had told you about the vinyl, when you started purchasing the vinyl before you purchased the player that was sitting there in front of you, I had actually gone to Walmart and taken a look at that player. And I had taken a look at the LP Go. I had taken a look at the LP 60, the LP 120, and then the one that I eventually settled on, which you also have now. I wanted to wait for you to reveal that one.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, don't
just
worry.
Give the reveal away.
Not entirely. Here's what's going on. Okay, before we get to that, essentially what had happened was, the piece that I had beforehand, which is a old used Gemini professional DJ turntable. It's a great turntable. It's just old, and it had a lot of those bits and pieces that I knew that I needed in order to get something done right that would play my LPs without damaging them, that would XYZ, all this kind of bullshit. Now, there is a unit that I had that I knew, the next unit that I knew I wanted, which I had researched those three units, and there were ones that I figured would be like, okay, yeah, that'd be good enough, but I want something that's just beyond that, because I want something with, you know, an exchangeable... I want something with exchangeable head shell. I want something that I can do some extra adjustments on that were outside of the parameters of your standard consumer turntable. And the reason the place where I really learned the lesson was when the one you were telling me about, the little suitcase one, the Crossley we were talking about a little bit ago, we picked up a Crossley brand piece when I was looking at other turntables. And the reason why I wanted something more than that was because I learned how reliable the Crossley played, and it played better than my Prograde piece, but it didn't sound very good in any respect. It sounded like trash. The audio output was terrible. But I knew that I wanted...
those little tiny speakers.
Right. I knew that I wanted something essentially the next step beyond what I thought would be good enough. And so when you told... when you asked me, when you sent me that text, hey, is this one that will work? I was looking at the unit that I had, at the budget that I spent, and you were looking at what you were looking for, and I thought, at that moment, hands down, full, completely honest to whatever in control being of the universe there actually is, okay? Honest hand to whatever that is, that unit that you were showing me was something that would do you just fine while being minimal on the configuration department. Because if it's more configurable parts, it means it's more bits and pieces that are able to fuck up. And so I knew what you wanted was, because this is from conversations with you that we've recorded for the podcast, right? That we've had go out. You want something that plays.
Plug and play guy.
Yeah, you want to plug it in, you want to play it, you want to hit the play button and let it do its fucking thing. And when you showed me, when I found out what the features were, it was like, oh, because I was like enamored at the fact that this thing has a start and stop button. That I could put the record on the platter, shut the top, hit the start button, and it just does the whole thing on its own, the one that I had. Finding out that you had that on yours, I was like, holy shit, absolutely, that's what you want. I was like, I was looking at yours and being like, maybe I spent a little bit too much money on mine. I don't know.
Well, wait, yours doesn't, your, well, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
I was wanting something that was something to start out with that was going to be good, that wasn't going to damage the records, that was going to be, again, the plug-and-play type of thing. But the the goal is, it still has to be able to play what I want it to play. And this is one of those moments where I've had these moments where I've gotten a basic model of something and realized later that maybe I shouldn't have gotten the basic model. Maybe I should have gotten just a slight upgrade. And it's taught me to, in most situations, to, again, do that research and find out that maybe the little extra bit of money for the slightly upgraded thing that, yes, may have a few more moving parts and may require a little bit more work, may give you a better situation to where if you spend a little more to buy this slightly better one now, you may not have to upgrade from your basic one later. One of the examples that this has happened with for me and is an example you don't wouldn't have a full understanding with is my vape products that I use.
That's
when
fair.
I've upgraded, when I've upgraded into different vape mods, I do tons of research on those, and I specifically look for things that have I have specific things I look for. I won't go into detail about those, but I will find what will be the minimal acceptable that I will take. And then I'll usually go one or two grades slightly above that, knowing that that will give me more time before I have to upgrade again. Then, you know, you get what I'm saying here? I just go a little bit higher than the, than exactly what I'm looking for, so that I have a little more features. Sometimes features I don't even use, but that has that those few extra features that are just kind of nice to have and gives me a little bit better product, a little bit more longevity. I spend a little bit more money then, but I have something that does better for me in the long run of things. And so it comes, you know, you get that idea of price for value. And I will say for most, for many record needs, I'm not going to say most, but for many record needs, the one that I got, the Audio-Technica that I got from Walmart, is a really good beginner system, especially if you're just getting into it and you intend to spend a whole lot money, a whole lot more money on a better record system later, a better player, a better, you know, setup later. That's it's a good, it is a good starting out. It's a better starting out than the little suitcase units for sure, especially because it does, it also has Bluetooth connectivity. So you can hook up your Bluetooth speakers to it, your Bluetooth headset to it. There's a bunch of things that are really nice about it. It's not a bad product. However, the problem that it has, and we're going through this because, you know, I tell you that I'm a bit mad as let me go back to the discussion. I tell you that I'm a bit mad. And you asked me the key question here, something that I didn't think about. I didn't know about because before this, I hadn't done my research. I had just bought something. This is the question that set me off, that got me thinking. And this is the lesson I want to bring to people listening to the podcast.
Okay.
You asked me one question and it totally reverts my whole thing. Is your stylus adjustable at all?
I was wondering if that was it.
You add onto this, my player has an adjustable counterweight to set the proper downward pressure and anti-skate adjustment as well. You may have that.
Right.
And then I said instructions. You said you could look up your you could look up my manual, which by the way, there wasn't a real manual. I learned my lesson today. There wasn't a real manual with mine. There was two pieces of paper that had instructions to start it, and that's it. Because the tone arm is not adjustable on the Audio-Technica Go. There is no adjustable tone arm. It's just a standard arm that comes over with the thing. Very lightweight, exceptionally lightweight.
Right.
In fact, so lightweight that certain dynamic music will cause it to, basically, it'll cause the needle to pop up, the arm to pop up.
Yeah.
And when it does that, that's when you're getting your skipping because it's so lightweight. Now, it's lightweight because you don't want to damage the record. But the problem with the lightweightness of it is, again, if you have in the grooves of the record, if you got too many high points, it's going to pop up and not sit in there properly. That's what's getting your skipping. That's a really basic version for people to understand that don't fully understand. The needle's popping up because the bumps in the ridge are too high.
You know what's really funny? I've been wanting to bring this up. I'm going to interject real quick because it has to do with what you're talking about. It's a little piece of musical history, including a band that you absolutely loathe. So you're going to really enjoy this. The second Led Zeppelin album, actually, there is a very collectible, very first retail release pressing of Led Zeppelin 2 that is very sought after. And the reason why it is because...
Skeet shooting?
No. So here's what happened. On the listen back of a retail release of that album, after it went to press, and it was mastered, and it was, you know, put out, and
Mastering processes includes limiting and certain dynamic range issues and stuff like that to stop things like what you're talking about happening with your record skipping, right? But there's obviously different grades of record players and all that kind of shit. Now, the funny part about this is literally what you went through with your record player and having to upgrade it is what actually affected the professional output of the pressing of one of the biggest records in 70s rock history, or late 60s. I think it's late 60s, 68, something like that. Anyway, I'll move on with this. So essentially what happened was the manager of the band, and I can't remember his name, and he was big. I don't think it was Ahmet Erdogan, but it was somebody else. But one of the biggest managers, an A&R or something like that, for the band, was listening to one of the first run retail press of Led Zeppelin II, and it started skipping tracks. It started jumping on the record player he was using. So he gets infuriated. He's pissed because he's like, how could you let a release like this come out like this? You guys need to relimit the record. You need to redo it so that it actually is controllable. And so you can play it on standard record players. This is bullshit. So what ends up happening is Led Zeppelin II, the record on all subsequent presses, has reduced dynamics output because of this complaint from literally the manager of the band at the time. The funny part is, the reason why he was calling and complaining about it was because he was playing it on his daughter's practically toy record player that's about the same grade as the little suitcase Crossley pieces. Which, funny enough, in this case, happened to play a record that wasn't skipping, but it's because of the configuration of the record player that you had. Like, you had better audio output, but your tone arm wasn't a professional grade tone arm in any, basically, it wasn't high enough in the dynamic range capabilities in order to handle it. So
yeah,
the reason why that happened, and on a whole record that was pressed and left, like the second album from one of the biggest bands in the world that I know you absolutely hate, but I thought it was a really funny piece of history. The reason why it happened was because this guy played that record on a toy record player, basically, and it affected the professional output of that record in all subsequent pressings until Jimmy Page remastered it in like fucking 2017 or 18 or some shit on the new pressings. Now they're done like high grade, blah, blah, blah. But those first run pressings now are worth a stupid amount of money if you can find them. And there's like some change in like the color used on the jacket or some bullshit that you can... I can't remember what the detail is, but I find it really funny.
Identify it, basically.
Yeah. So the thing is that's one of the things that one of the details a lot of people overlook in looking for this, especially new people to this. Like, you're essentially new to vinyl. I'm new to vinyl. But one of the things that I find so funny is that this new generation of people that start getting into it don't find these details in their record players, or they don't look for these things.
Well, and to be honest, at the same time I was talking to you about this, and there's, you know, there's a bunch of, we go through discussion of manual, and I realize today how off things were and how much of a really basic, and this is a basic beginner model that, as far as I'm concerned, you're probably, anybody that's wanting to get into it for something cheap, don't spend the money on this Audio Technica. It's not a bad model. I'm not saying it is. But with the amount of instructions, the two pages of instructions, and the some of the other things that I'll talk about in a minute,
yeah,
it's almost worth either spending more or spending less and buying one of the smaller models to start out with.
Yeah.
Because this thing is right in this weird bad Goldilocks zone, not in a good Goldilocks zone.
Yeah.
It's in a bad one where it's
the bad Goldilocks zone.
It's not necessarily worth the price that you pay for it for what you get out of it, because of the fact that the most of the parts are really good. I mean, the felt mat is decent for being a felt mat, although I found out later that felt mat is the worst way to go. You're better with cork or rubber, or some people even use like glass and acrylic.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ones for those. Holy smokes. Yeah.
So the felt ones, even though you can get cool ones from the different bands with their logo and shit on it,
yeah,
don't go with the felt mats. It's not enough cushioning for one. For two, it builds up the dust and static, which is what you don't want because that damages your records and fills up the grooves and not good. That's what that's what makes more popping and more bad things.
Yep.
And yes, it's pretty solidly constructed. I mean, the platter itself is aluminum construction, but when you compare it to something that is literally $70 to $100 less in the suitcase brands,
yeah,
you're not getting as good a product, but you're getting, for value, you may actually be getting something that is better for your starting off than what this one is. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to spend the money for this one, spend the extra, depending on whether it's on sale, $50 to $100.
Mm-hmm.
To get something that's a little bit better. And again, we're going through this and I'm trying to show you different things on the instructions. And you were saying something about having a counterweight on the back of my tone arm.
Yeah. Okay. So at least the counterweight is not adjustable, right? But it's not adjustable in really any way. So,
and here's the thing. As I'm talking to you about this, I'm talking to my dad on the phone.
Yeah.
You say, you know, when you picked up the upgrade to what I had, an upgraded version, which is the one that you have.
Yeah.
You had to adjust it a bit, but you're not getting any skipping.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go through, I'm pissed. You asked if I have cleaner. Don't have that yet.
I was trying to go over all of the, so the first thing I go for, yeah, I go through all the possibilities, and I think I shared this with you at one point during the text feed that we had going on between each other. Essentially, one of the things that I learned is when you are problem solving, you start with the cheapest problem first. So the first thing you're thinking of is their dust or their grime or their dirt. Well, the records are fresh, so absolutely not. Okay, yeah. Well then what about on the needle? What about the head shell? What's the next piece? Like, what's causing it? And so as I went through and I went through the possibilities of what could be done that either spend time or the lowest amount of money, it eventually hit the point that it's okay, this seems like the player. And I hate to say it because I felt like I were to state that, I'd be breaking your heart with the amount of time and money and stress that you had spent worrying about this being the problem. Like worrying about having to spend as much as you have to in order to enjoy just fucking sitting and playing. Like, you could bust out your phone and play the same fucking music at a moment's notice on a billion streaming fucking platforms with no problem. And I didn't, I knew that you were making a jump into very uncharted waters. And those uncharted waters had such a great payoff at the end. Like, learning how to swim in those uncharted waters, just, I knew that there was a lot of payoff to it. So I didn't want to say anything that would just break that motivation. I didn't want to do it. But at the same time, when it came down to the fact that it was like, I think it might be your player, I hated to say it because you had spent so much money on it and you were stressing about whether or not that'd be the case. And I it's funny because I started stressing about it. Like, on your behalf, it was crazy.
You had the stress when you were dealing with yours.
Well, yeah. Well, my stress was just like, the thing about my stress is that I'm just like, well, I'm just going to figure out what to do because I know that there's a way of doing it. I look at this situation. I go, there's fucking so many people that do this on a casual, if not like audiophile grade level, and they do it and they make it affordable for themselves. So what steps do I have to take to make it to that point? And problem solving is just, to that degree, problem solving is my thing. I get off on problem solving to that degree. So it wasn't really that big of a deal to me because I'm enjoying the process of learning how this stuff works and making that happen. But that doesn't mean that everybody does. And there's a lot of people that deal with a lot of things in their lives. And I know that you have a lot that you deal with. There's a lot that you've dealt with. And I was trying to be as considerate of your of your situation as I possibly could, and possibly even a little over considerate, if I may say.
I mean, you can be a little more brutal with me. It's okay.
I just didn't want to say, hey, what you bought that I told you
with.
I just wanted to say, like, what what you bought that I told you to, I didn't want to say what you bought that I told you to buy was shitty equipment. That just feels bad on my end, you know?
Well, you know, and I would have been a little bit like, dude, you said to buy it, but I understood that you were in a time press. I was in a time press. Neither one of us had time to do any research. And here's the thing. You didn't necessarily recommend a bad product. I'm not saying this one is a bad product.
Right.
It's just not the right product for what I was looking to get. And like I said, I was talking to my dad at the same time and telling him that I'm doing research. We research mats and we go through discussion with changing the mat work. Would that make a difference?
Yeah.
Probably not, because the problem that we're having, and my dad gave me another key. So you gave me one with the adjustable tone arm. And I'm thinking to myself, I've had so many different things where, again, adjustability, the ability to change things out, the ability to modify, is a big deal for me. Like, again, I can harken back to my vaping stuff. What I use for vaping is I have a specific tank that, cause I would tank for the liquid. I have a specific tank that has a deck in it to rebuild the coils. Cause again, we've gone over vaping in here, but a quick recap. The liquid goes into a cotton or sometimes metal mesh material where it goes through a coil. The coil gets heated up. It vaporizes the liquid. That's what vaping is, basically.
Yeah.
Basic example. A lot of the stuff that they sell nowadays has pre-built coils. The coils are built for you. The metal coil and the cotton's already put in there. You put in the pre-built coil thing. You use it till it doesn't work anymore. The cotton's been fouled or the coil breaks. And then you put a new one in. Okay?
Okay. Gotcha.
The tanks that I have for myself and for my wife are tanks that you can build your own coils and put your own coils in. I don't wrap my own coils anymore. I buy pre-built metal coils that are just the metal coil itself. I put them into the deck and then I put the cotton through them, and you can re-cotton the coil multiple times before the coil is no good anymore. And then you switch out the coils. But okay. I buy these ones specifically so I have control over putting the coils in myself. I taught myself how to build the coils, how to put them in, how to maintain them, so that I could change the things out for a lot cheaper, a whole lot cheaper, and I could do it whenever I wanted to, depending on getting the flavor right when the cotton fouls up and gets burnt, or when it burns apart and there's no more cotton in there. I bought those specifically for the ability to have some level of customization. I can change the type of coil that's in there. It'll give me a different hit, a different feel. I can do more with it than the ones that you just have to screw in whatever pre-built coils. And I was rushing when I got this. I got the records. I wanted a record player. I didn't wait. And I, instead of researching, instead of looking, instead of finding something that had more capability to it, I bought what was available. And so as I'm talking to my dad about this and saying I'm having this problem, you know what my dad says? Out of the blue. My dad says, why don't you just tape a quarter to the tone arm? That's what we used to do back in the day. If your needle was skipping too much, just tape a quarter to it or whatever. I'm like, you're adding counterweight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just tape a quarter to it.
That's all
you're doing. That's what we used to do. I'm like, holy shit. So this is a problem that used to happen. Oh, yeah, all the time you get these kind of things. The only thing you could do with the tone arms back then is to tape something to them. People used to use quarters because it was cheap and easy. I'm like, you just gave me the next piece of the puzzle. The piece of the puzzle I need is I for what I'm going to want, for me to not have to want to upgrade within a year, for me to not have to be searching for the thing I want, I need something that has adjustability. Yep. I need something that has the capability for me to affect a difference in it. And this thing that I have, the only way to affect a difference is to tape a freaking coin to it. That shit's not going to happen. And so I kept diving into research. And what it came down to was the one that you bought, which is the LP3, right? That's the one you got?
Yes.
The LP3, it's still the Audio-Technica. The Audio-Technica LP3 has a fully adjustable counterweight, and it has the capability to switch out the cartridges so you can get different needles, basically. Different styles of needles, completely different styles. It does. There's two different types that you can do, two different magnetic type of things. I don't know all the details. I'm still researching that part.
But you're talking about the different types of. Yeah. Yes. We won't get into that. I'm sorry.
That's too much detail.
Yeah. That's super deep. Yeah.
But. I started looking at this, and I'm like, this seems to be the one. It's a little, it is more money. Of course, it ended up, it was a little bit more money, and then, it, of course, I didn't make a decision immediately because I was waiting, and one of the downsides of waiting to make your decision sometimes is that the price goes up, and the price went up by $50.
I was so heartbroken. I was like, dude, it's like, I wasn't trying to tell you to buy it because I didn't know that the sale price was going to end literally that night. I had no idea. And when you showed me, I looked it up, I was like, fuck, it's back up another 50. I thought they were clearing them out for like holiday season, but apparently they weren't. They were just throwing them on sale. I had no idea.
No, and knowing my luck, by next week it'll be down again, but that's all right. I will live with making my decision when I made it. And I got to a point, like, you know, I thought about buying a refurbished one because the prices were better. And it came down to, this is the message I sent. This is when I was just like, I wasn't sure what to do yet. Everything I've seen about record skipping issues is to first clean the record, then second adjust the record player. But my current player isn't adjustable. And that's what it came down to was I searched over so many things, and you clean the record, make sure the record is good, and then you adjust the player. I can't adjust this player. So if I have any problems in the future, I have a player that's not adjustable.
Right. So now you're taping. It's funny because I remember you told me your dad said to tape a quarter, and I went, a quarter is too much. Wait. Tape a dime, because a dime splits the difference. Yeah, I'm just like, well, the penny's heavier than a dime. Start with a dime, because a dime will add like maybe a gram worth of weight. It's not that much of weight, but you need to have like it's really so. One of the things that I found out while I was researching what was going on was that your stylus on that player, on that original player that you had, and the stylus on this one are interchangeable, and they work at the same weight. They work at 2 grams of weight. That's what they're designed for. They're the same type of stylus, and they're the same. The difference between the two is that, like, the one that you have now technically is, like, a little bit better high-end and a little bit better low-end, but you may not even hear that depending on the system that you have, and that is a factor. No. So that being said, I knew that they worked at that weight, but it may just be that you need a little bit more. So I was like, okay, well, if you just taped a dime to the top of it, it probably isn't a big deal. But at the same time, I'm like, that sounds kind of jank anyway. Like, nobody should have to do that to play their records.
With a dime attached to it.
Right, exactly. You shouldn't have to do that because who knows, like, how much weight is that dime going to be? Can you measure it? Is it too much for a record? And from what I've learned today, by the way, I was able to, like, quiz one of the employees of a local record store and be like, so, like, I learned how often you should clean it if you're even doing casual play, as far as records are concerned or styluses. I learned if you're talking about doing wet clean or dry clean, like how much do you have to do? And I'm watching this guy clean his records, and he's doing like sonic cleaning on like groups of like 5 or 6, where it literally throws sound at the record while it's sitting vertical, and it pulls the dust off of it into a chamber. And then there's like a wet cleaning setup where you literally like put, you know, you spray record cleaner on it, and you sit there and wipe the living piss out of it with a microfiber cloth. And he's like, he's pressing down on this thing and moving the rag over the grooves to the point where I'm like, damn, dude. Like, and he's doing it because he's getting, you know, fresh records coming in from God knows how many buyers, and he is just working into these grooves on this thing. And so I'm looking at this and going, okay, these have to be pretty fucking resilient. Like, this really shouldn't be a major deal then, if you're running a needle at like 2 to 3 grams worth of weight across and be able to, you know, I'm thinking about like all these little different details and shit. And here we are thinking about all of the little bits and pieces and settings, but at the same time, like, you shouldn't have to worry about all those little details with a record player. That's the point that I'm getting at, talking about all these little tangenty details. You should not have to worry about these. You should be able to hit the play button and let it go.
Well, and that's just, you know, again, to carry on with what I was saying at that point, I was saying I it's just a frustrating hole I find myself in. They had some awesome parts to it, but it's also exactly the hell that I was worried record collecting would be in, and what prevented me from getting into it for so long. I was having that moment of like, shit. But then, we talk more. You talk about maybe you can upgrade down the road. I'm like, upgrading down the road comes with its own drawbacks too. At this point, just kind of frustrated with the whole thing. That's why I resisted for so long.
Right.
Well, I acknowledged that my preconceived notions on this.
I knew I was tiptoeing. I was trying to tiptoe the best I could to not remove your enthusiasm for doing this, while at the same time being able to give you the advice that you needed.
So, and we get through and talk more about Cork. And what it comes down to is I'm still in the window that I can return the one that I bought, because I have a 30-day window to return the one that I bought initially.
Cool.
So, obviously, as Mike has already said, I bit the bullet, and I bought the upgraded model. I bought the LP3, ordered it from Amazon. It arrived today. And I was a little worried about setting it up, because, you know, you have to, with the counterweight, you have to balance the arm perfectly with the counterweight.
Isn't and then that
you
weird?
Have to set it to the 2 grams.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That was a little funky for me too.
And that was a little hard, because, like, I'm sitting there looking, I set it sideways so I can look at it. I'm like, is that balanced? Turn it a little tiny bit. No, it's
put
not
a level
now.
On it. Don't no, let the needle touch
anything. Don't let the, because you have to take the cover off the needle, because that's extra weight. And so you have to make sure that the thing is balanced right without that extra weight on it. And it's like, getting it balanced. I got it balanced. I'm like, okay, good. Oh shit. I'm not on the, I don't have it set where I'm supposed to have it set. Well, once it's balanced, it should stay balanced. Just keep it on the cradle for, keep the tone arm on the cradle and I can move it. I moved it to where it needed to go. I go to start it and it's not plugged in. I'm like, oh shit. So I plug it in. I make sure I turn the thing around. With this one, you have to turn the platter 10 times to
set
the
motor or whatever. You gotta set it to make sure that it's even. Mm-hmm.
And so.
Also, make sure that you're not twisting the belt when you put it on.
Yeah, I make sure that the belt is
I twisted the belt the first time I did it.
I did that good, but that's because I had a lot of practice as a kid working with things like that. Not the belt on a record player, but the old G.I. Joes, they used to have a little rubber thing inside them that would keep the leg and kind of pelvic portion attached.
Like, yeah, it would like stabilize them, wouldn't it?
No. Here's the thing. There's a screw in the back of the G.I. Joes, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the back of their body.
Yeah.
And then there's like a rubber loop inside of them. And the legs are two legs that are attached with a metal piece in the middle and a hook. Okay.
Right.
And the pelvis is just a plastic pelvic piece. So you could actually change out the legs and the pelvis of them if you knew what you were doing.
Oh, interesting.
I used to be really good at it. Yeah, because you could change them to make, you can make your own people. You know, you could change the, if you took them apart, you can give them a different back, a different front, different arms, and different legs and pelvis. So you can make like, you could take like three, four, five different people together and make like your own specialized uniform. That was modding,
G.I. Joe modding.
G.I. Joe's back in the day.
Back in the day, G.I. Joe modding. I love it.
Fuck yeah. To get that to attach to the really thick rubber band, the rubber circlet thing that they had in there to hold the legs in,
yeah,
you'd have to take a screwdriver, dig it out of the body
because it would snap into the body.
And you'd have to thread that through the pelvic part and then attach the hook that the legs were attached with. And so I got really good at that kind of stuff. So attaching the band in there to get the motor running was fine. I get it set up.
I love that the skill set that you developed as a child in order to make sure that you could set your turntable properly. I love that.
Hell yes. And so I get that set up and I'm like, okay. It's into the fire with this. And so first thing that's put on there, garage ink. Because I have my other record player sitting right next to it. I'm like, I'm trying garage ink. If it doesn't work, if garage ink doesn't work, this thing is set. I can adjust it if I need to. If garage ink doesn't work and I can't adjust it to make it work, this has free returns on it because it's from Amazon. I'll send this shit back and I'll deal with the less expensive one. I'll deal with the other one until I'm ready to really pay to upgrade to something major.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I turn it on. By the way, I love the cartridge that's in there that has the needle in it. Like I told you when you sent me video of it, it looks like a freaking dragon.
Yeah.
The shape
of
it makes me think of a dragon. I push the button because mine does have a push button start. Yours does too, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's the exact same. This is the first record player I've ever had that had a little push button start like that. It's so cool.
Oh god. It's amazing.
It's the dumbest thing to be all excited about, but I fucking love it. It's so cool.
Because I literally was one of the things I didn't want to get into records for was terrified of putting the needle down. I used to be terrified of it as a kid. I never messed it up, but I was terrified of doing it as a kid. And so, you know, I didn't want to do that on a record collection that I had bought. I pushed the button and I have it on, what am I listening to? I'm listening to Die, Die, My Darling as the first song, knowing that if it's going to skip, it's going to skip there. Listen to Die, Die, My Darling. Perfect sound the whole way through.
Fuck yeah.
Listen to the rest of that, the whole side of that record. Pull that one off and I'm like, all right, now I need to listen to Helpless. put on Helpless. Nothing. I'm waiting for the guitar solo to start, because that's one of the places you talk about it skipping.
Uh-huh.
And it did for me. Nothing. Played through perfectly. I'm like, I think we got it. Played through the whole of that. And then I'm like, you know what? I know a song that's dynamic. I know a song that's got different highs and lows. And it's got places where the sound goes out almost completely and then pops right back up.
Oh, yes.
So I played Lover Man.
Yep, that's the one. Dude, God, the first time I ever heard that, it actually jump scared me. It was so good. Now I know to expect it, but the first time I ever heard it, I think it was like 16, 17 years old. Boom, it just comes in like out of nowhere. Absolute nowhere from dead ass silence. So good.
I love that song.
Yeah.
So get that. Get the Merciful Fate medley, which is also very dynamic. No issues, no problems. And I'm like, yep, I'm sold. But here's the kicker. And here's the thing where, you know, it isn't always a true thing. It isn't always a true thing. But when you're dealing with certain items, there are some giveaways sometimes that one item is possibly better than the other. Especially when you're looking for something that has stability, right?
Of course.
Stability, strength, some, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
When there is a marked difference in the weight between two products.
Yeah.
Moreover, when there's a marked difference in how big the instruction manual is for two products. Because I have a book that's an instruction manual in multiple languages, mind you.
Yes.
Multiple languages, but even in the one language that I can easily understand, it still had like 10 pages of instructions where I had 2 pages of instructions with the other one. And the heaviness, when it arrived and the, you know, my wife brings it inside from outside, she's like, hey, your thing's here, and it's heavy. She wasn't even able to carry it. She was kind of dragging the box it was in. It was in, you know, multi-layered box.
Yeah.
Being from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was heavy. And I carried it upstairs, and I'm like, damn, this thing is heavy. The box, way bigger than the box for the other one. And it is a much, much heftier system.
Yeah.
Than the other one. I mean, yeah. Much heftier. And just the weight of it just felt like, you know what? Yeah, I think this... I feel a lot better about this, but the idea of the customization. And so this is kind of the lesson I wanted to bring forward with this is, for anybody that's listening to this, that is looking to get into vinyl, if they, you know, feel that need, or not even just vinyl, but anything like that, do your research and find the thing that's going to give you the most capability that's still within your price range. Because that's the thing that makes me the happiest about this. Again, like I talked about to you, and I relayed these messages. I didn't want to have this one player and in a year want to upgrade and have another have, you know, this old player sitting around when I get a new one. I don't like having to do that. I much rather buy something, like I said, not exactly what I'm looking for, but a little bit better than what I'm looking for if I have the ability to. Just in case, so I don't have to replace it and upgrade as soon. And the nice thing about this is, with the adjustable weight on the back, with the fact that you can do multiple cartridges of different styles for whatever reason. I'm still going to research those and find out what the different types of cartridges do and what their purpose is and what their need is. On your recommendation, I did order at the same time, waiting for them to arrive, an appropriate cleaning kit to keep my records clean.
Cool.
I also, and to keep the needles clean, I also ordered a scale to be able to help, set the proper weight, counterweight for the needle. I ordered that, a digital scale, which I'm not going to use now for this one because I already got it to work for, you know, I already set it up for right now. But when I change out and try different cartridges on there, I want to make sure I have something to help me dial it in if I need to. And it wasn't very much. It was only like a $14 item. But the idea is this thing gives the ability to try things in different ways. It gives different upgradable abilities. It's not just your basic entry-level thing. And yeah, it costs more, but I can see that at this point, what I'm looking at is the only thing that I might eventually upgrade is my stereo receiver, which is, I don't even know how old this damn thing is. I mean, it's an Optimus brand, so what does that tell you? Not even a brand anybody knows about. And only two of the speaker ports work. It only has four speaker ports, and only two of them work. So, I mean,
sometimes there's an A/B setup on those. There's an A/B setup on those. You gotta watch out for it because there might be a speaker A and speaker B output. Like there should be buttons on the front.
There is, but only speaker the speaker B output is the only one that works. The speaker A output does not work at all.
Oh shit!
Even when you push the button.
Oh damn! That means the amp's blown. That's what I'm saying. Oh well. Hey, as long as speaker B works, you got output. You're good.
I got that, and I got the two old-ass speakers that I have, and it at least makes sound for right now. But what that tells me is, eventually, I can spend the money not necessarily on another record player, because what else do I need for the record player? This will do. Actually, there is one other thing I might need, but that's only if I get really niche, and that's another speed. But...
Oh, what, like 78?
How many 78s are there anymore?
Yeah, dude, 78s are like... I have one 78 record that I will never dare play on this thing. The 78 RPM record I have is it's actually made out of a different material entirely, shellac versus when people say vinyl, that's like super slang. You're actually, the discs are made of PVC essentially. But shellac was what was used for records before PVC was the norm. And shellac operates at 78 RPMs, which is like stupid fast. And there are record players that actually have three speeds that could play a shellac record at 78. The cheaper ones, a lot of the cheaper ones do. I went to a local record shop actually that was designed specifically like for classic shellac records that actually has, instead of having like an audio output jack on it, it's so old, it actually has a speaker output that outputs to a chamber. It's a little suitcase player. And it's got a speaker output that outputs to a chamber so you can hear the record coming out of the back of the record player, like, and reflecting off of the top as it hinges vertical. It's crazy, but it's just this really weird, like, piece. I think it was like $200, and it's like antique, and it's like practically antique, and it still operates, which is like miraculous to me. And oh, it was a wind up too. That's how old 78s nice. Are. Yeah, that's how old 78s are. Is they're fucking wind ups.
And that's the thing is, I don't see myself getting that niche and that deep into it.
Yeah.
But it just means that at some point I can upgrade my receiver, upgrade the speaker setup that I have, and buy a stereo unit that has a good receiver and good speakers. And I don't need to worry about that right now because I can't play my stuff that loud anyway, because my loft is above the garage, which is the sister-in-law's bedroom, and she works overnight and sleeps during the day, so I can only listen to my music so loud anyway.
Right.
But so I don't need to invest money into a stereo system yet. That part can actually come later because I can actually enjoy everything as it is now with the limitations that I have now. Mm-hmm. It does suck that this one doesn't have Bluetooth capability, so my really awesome over-the-ear Bluetooth headphones that I have, I can't connect those to it to just be able to listen on headphones if I wanted to super loud. But I also have a reclining chair that is literally sitting right in front of where this record player is and where the speakers are. So even at the volume that I listen to it while I'm working, which I'm a good 15 feet, 12 feet away from the speakers while I'm working, where I'm sitting right now, mm-hmm. I'm a good 12 feet away or so. So I can hear the sound really good at the volume that I have it at. If I sit in the chair, which is about 6 feet away from the speakers, the volume is really nice. And the speakers are about, you know, parallel to where the sides of my head are. Or, you know, a foot or two off to the sides of my head.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the sound exactly as I should hear it sitting in that chair. And I can sit and relax in my chair and listen to the records and get at the volume that that I leave it at and get a perfectly good volume to be able to enjoy without it being too loud. Perfectly good volume to enjoy. Maybe with a newer receiver, I'll get a little bit more clarity because this thing is old. So who knows what's getting lost in the mix there. But at the same time, The key is making sure that you have the appropriate record player, the appropriate piece of equipment for what you want to do. And that's the thing is, again, the one I bought from Walmart, the LPG Go or the LP Go, is a decent product if you're looking for something just basic to listen to, just basic records. I will say you may be overpaying if that's all that you're looking for, because you do need to have a stereo system to hook up into mm-hmm. for it. So, you know, if you're just looking to be casual about it and aren't worried necessarily about possible warpage of your records, the suitcase things can be fine. You're not going to get the greatest sound, but it may be your gateway in. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get this one from Walmart, go right ahead. But I would say it's worth a little bit of extra money, I think, to get something that gives you the ability to adjust it. So you're not just stuck with, I mean, imagine if you had a belt that only had one hole in the loop, you know, one hole in it to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. The fact that you have a belt that has multiple holes so that you can adjust, you know, depending on what time of year it is and whether you've put on your Christmas weight or not, or whether it's beach season and you try to lose some of the weight, having that adjustability is helpful. But if you had seat belts that only, you know, went to one size, man, if you're too skinny, you're too fat, you're going to have trouble sitting in there. Adjustable seats, adjustable steering wheel, adjustable anything, shoes that have adjustability, anything that you have that you can adjust in some way, man, it's nice to have that ability to adjust instead of just being stuck with what it can do. And that's, in this, especially when you're dealing with something that is a physical medium like this, that literally requires motion and the interpretation of that motion into electrical signal. You want to make sure you have something you can adjust to get the signal right, you know?
Absolutely. Well, here to not necessarily to counterpoint, but to supplement what's going on here. I would personally state that if you're going to get into this hobby, make sure that you get a player that can handle the awesomeness that comes off the vinyl. Because that's, to be completely fair, what may have happened in your situation. The music was just too damn good for your record player to handle, so you had to upgrade it in order to be able to hear it properly.
You're stealing my shit.
Is that what I was doing?
Hold on a second.
I've had that in the bank for like 30 minutes. You're stealing my shit. I was waiting for a time to drop the line.
So yeah, let me read the actual exchange.
Oh yeah?
This is Mike. Okay, yeah, I think this is a volume issue. Kick, especially low end, is really prominent in the EP alone, and that reinforces the consideration in the rest of the album.
So we're talking about I'm talking about the Garage Days Re-Revisited EP, which is that's what Helpless is part of.
And then I said, "Yep, going into the solo too, and out of the solo." And then I said, so basically the dynamic range of this album is beyond the capability of this machine to handle properly due to the construction of the arm. Or, in simple terms, the heaviness of Metallica keeps balancing the light-ass needle.
Yes.
Stealing my shit. And literally, that's what it come down to. Is I went through the same thing that you went through in that I needed something that had a little bit more robustness to it to handle what I wanted to do with this. And at this point, I've only had it for a few hours, but I can tell you, I was at a point where if this thing didn't work, I was returning this one. I was considering returning the old one. I was considering returning all of the records and just be like, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm done.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that you didn't. That point. I am so glad that you didn't. I am so glad that you were able to take some time and really, like, really figure this out, man. I am so glad that you are coming out the other side of this with the attitude that you have right now.
And it even made me start looking into other things. And I don't have a big collection yet. I have a big collection for somebody that's just starting out and already bought like way too many records. At least it gives me stuff to listen to. Although it's kind of like the van in Fanboys, but instead of All Rush All the Time, it's All Metallica All the Time. But
fair.
But I was even doing some research into having issues with putting my, you know, taking my records out and putting them away because I had put them in the anti-static individual pouches for the records, right? The individual sleeves for the records.
Yep.
And then I had the jacket in the oversleeve. Mm-hmm. But pulling the jacket out of the oversleeve and then trying to pull the records out with the individual sleeves that they were in and trying to put those back into the jacket, it was starting to fox the corners a little bit on the jackets. It was crinkling the sleeves a little bit, the individual sleeves. Mm-hmm. And they're just a pain in the ass to try to put it in and out of there. And I'm just going, there's gotta be a better way to do this. So as I'm listening to Garage Inc. and just becoming happier and happier that it's finally playing, and that being one of my favorite albums anyway, just it's playing and I'm like, this is great. This is fantastic. I'm so happy with this. It's giving me what I want. I was like, you know what? I make this one better. And I learned what's considered, I guess, a normal collector's trick, because mm-hmm. three or four different collectors said the exact same thing, on how to store your vinyl properly to make it for vinyl you want to listen to specifically, how to make it easy to access, yet you're still keeping everything safe and in good condition. Mm-hmm. And for the specific vinyl that, you know, both you and I have collected, these Metallica vinyls with the, and any of the newer ones. I mean, even the Chipmunks one I have has a bubblegum pink record. It's not just black.
I was so tempted to pick up that Chipmunk punk record that I found. I was really because it was like $10. I was like, part of me wanted to really do it, but I rescinded on it. I decided to get something else that I thought was much more appropriate. And on a day, by the way, that I didn't realize, yesterday I was out at one of our favorite places and I picked up, I don't know if I showed you a picture. I know I shared it on social media.
Where was this at?
I was at a place called The Cave.
Oh, you were at The Cave.
Okay. Yeah, I was at The Cave, and I happened to find a copy of Van Halen's first album. I was just rifling through, you know, all the vinyl there, and I found a copy of Van Halen's debut album, 1978, and I could not believe that what I found was a promotional copy. And it turned out that it was a promotional copy, first pressing, which means it was one of the first pressings of the record, period, that was ever made. So I snagged it. And it turned out that it was, now we're recording this on, what is it, the 7th? Right now we're recording on the 7th, it's going to come out on the 10th.
Yes.
So we record, I purchased this yesterday, it was October 6th. It was actually the 2-year anniversary of the death of Eddie Van Halen, and I was completely unaware of that when I purchased the record. So when I
said you needed it.
Dude, Universe said I needed it, and as soon as I learned, I was like, I'm playing this bastard right now. And I played it, and it sounded absolutely incredible, and it reminded me of a thing that I had promised myself to do that I still haven't done yet because I haven't had the time to sit down, which was, I'm reminding myself of it. I've reminded myself of it this morning, and I started researching ways.
Eruption?
Yeah, to learn to play Eruption. I never sat and did it. And I feel very disappointed in myself. I need to do that. Yeah. Complete and total side point. But it's nice to have like an original copy of, essentially an original copy of one of the biggest records of all time. And it sounded incredible. Like, it sounded so pristine for a copy that's fucking over 40 years old. That's crazy to me.
Well, and that's, I mean, We were going to get into another conversation of the sound of vinyl versus the sound of digital and comparing that to another medium, but we're going to do that, I think, on the next episode because we've gone pretty far on this topic.
Yeah, I think so.
And we're pretty long.
Yeah, we're pretty far in.
But no, it's still, you know, to be able to find that. And one of the nice things is, unlike cassette tapes, which is really what we kind of, as much as our parents had records and we may have dabbled in records a little bit as kids, cassette tapes were very much our personal introduction to owning music.
Yeah.
Records can, if taken care of properly, they can last a hell of a lot longer than cassette tapes. I mean, when they sent on the Voyager probe, when they sent, you know, humanity's information and shit, they sent that on a record, albeit a super fucking powered record, like metal shit, but still it was right on a freaking record and instructions how to make a way to play it. Because, wow, you know, that shit's going to stay. But yeah, that one's made out of metal. That ain't made out of no vinyl. So hopefully, wow. I don't know if we're at the point where the computerized civilization found Voyager yet and is preparing to give it a giant ship to live in and send it back to Earth to try to find its makers. Subtle little Star Trek reference there for you. But what's Voyager? I don't get it. But anyway.
Nobody remembers that, and that's what sucks.
I remember it. That was,
I loved Voyager. I thought Voyager was killer.
What do you mean, Voyager?
What do you mean, Voyager? The series,
I'm
man.
Talking about, I'm not talking about Voyager, the series. I'm talking about Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh my gosh. Boy, yeah, you went right over my head. I'm sorry.
I'm disappointed.
It's been a very long time since I've seen that movie. I'm going to have to see it again now. I got to do my homework. It's just a reminder. I have to do my homework again. Ah, shit, I can't. Paramount took all those movies down.
Well, you don't own them?
Actually, I think I do. I think I own the entire film series on DVD. God, now I got to go. So. I can go dig it out. Thanks.
I hope so.
Reminding me what I've missed out on for years. It's been a while since I've seen those.
It's sad when the Star Wars fan has to school the Star Trek fan on Star Trek.
Oh, fuck you.
Although you could be one of those that's just a series fan and not the movie fans. I'm a movie fan and not as much a series fan. So as far as Star Trek goes, I know the movies really, really well. With the exception of there's one Next Generation movie that I've never actually seen all the way through.
Oh, which one was it? Nemesis?
Insurrection. No, I've seen Nemesis.
Oh, Insurrection actually, it's all right.
I know.
I mean, it sucks it sucks that Insurrection is so because F. Murray Abraham is in it. And he is,
he's
his
fantastic.
He's
the
incredible.
Only part I've seen.
He's incredible in that film, but the rest of it just doesn't feel, it doesn't even feel like an episode. Like, it just feels like it's filmed better, but it's very, yeah, I don't know. It's very lackluster in its storytelling. Nemesis was, I thought Nemesis was fucking great, though.
I liked Nemesis, but I'm not a Star Trek fan, so Nemesis was okay for me.
There's a lot of people didn't like Nemesis. Me. Yeah, apparently that one did even worse than Insurrection did. But I liked Nemesis, and there's a lot out of Nemesis that was like major canonical happenings, you know?
That and Ron Perlman, which anything Ron Perlman's in, I'm glad for Ron Perlman. So, with the exception of Sons of Anarchy, whole different story. But anyway, I was still blown out
when I learned like 20 years later that was Tom Hardy.
Yeah, that's Tom Hardy. Yeah. Tom Hardy was the clone of Picard, and then the main Riemann that is working with him is his name just escaped me, and I just said it. Ron Perlman.
Yes.
In heavy makeup, as always.
Yes. Dude, today I just learned, that, like, the star of She-Hulk was in, like, the sequel to Ginger Snaps.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, it took me years to realize that the president of the Federation was Red Foreman. So, I mean,
yeah,
you know, these things happen. But anyway, hopefully we've educated you a little bit on, I'm transitioning back to the vinyl talk.
I was going
to
say random Star Trek
you a little
day.
Bit on,
trivia
on
at the very end of the
vinyl
episode.
Records.
Yeah.
Hopefully you now, if you're going to experience vinyl, maybe you do some research like I didn't. And I'm glad that now I did, because I've learned a whole lot of stuff. I mean, I did a deep dive. I looked through, I'm going to say, at least 50 different websites trying to find things out. And honestly, I can say that, again, the one that I initially bought, okay. The one that I have now, the one that Mike has, honestly, if you have a little bit of extra money to start your beginner level there, this is a true good beginner level. If you're just somebody who's going to listen to, if you're just somebody who wants a player to listen to records occasionally, but if you're going to listen 2 to 3 times a week, or like me, 4 days a week while I'm lucky enough to sit in my home office and work, and as long as I don't got to make any phone calls, I have the record player. Like I said, it's about 12 feet from me, so it gives me a reason to get up every now and again, stretch the legs, don't sit in the same place all at once so I don't get, you know, swollen ankles or anything. Make sure I get that movement, and to have that music and be able to enjoy it that way, it may be worth it for you to spend a little bit more money, buy a little bit better product that you can have it grow with you, as opposed to you having to grow out of it.
Yes.
And that's maybe the best way to start an investment on something like that. Have something that can grow with you.
Exactly.
Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
Where can people hear you and me talk again about vinyl?
Well, you can be listening to us on our website, thezenigochronicles.com or zencron.com. You could also check us out on most major podcast platforms. Just search for The Zenigo Chronicles there. You could also check us out on YouTube. And YouTube has their podcast platform, so search for us there if you're not already listening to us there. And if you are listening to us on YouTube, or even listening on, well, listening to our video version format of it on YouTube's initial regular website, make sure that underneath this video, if you're watching it, make sure that you click the like button. And then next to that, a little bit farther over to the right, there is a subscribe button as well that you should check out. Or click anyway, so that the next time we have a podcast, I don't know, maybe you'll know about it. We don't really know, but in order to ensure that that happens, there's one more thing that needs to be done. James, what is that?
Drop the needle?
I mean, close.
Adjust the tone arm?
Not quite. I think you're getting a little bit farther away.
Click the bell.
That's right. Click the bell to make sure that you get notified. There are actually 2 different settings you could have. You can click personalized notifications, or some notifications, or all notifications. If you click either one of those, even all of them, that means every time we come out with a podcast or a video or anything, y'all know about it.
And while you're there, please, as I always say, make sure to check out Mike's 2 other YouTube pages. First one he has, where some of this discussion might actually have taken place, and he can even give you maybe a rundown of proper record care. Hey, here's there's idea. I may have given that one already. Proper record care, proper record storage. Sadly, he can't actually play and listen to the records unless he somehow or another gets his 3 albums from his 2 bands pressed into records because of licensing rights and shit.
Well, there's one of them that's definitely not being pressed a record, because I don't think it's even compatible with that. I may or may not have researched some things, sir.
Well, I'm going to know soon. But anyway, this is Mike's music page, Ruling Note Music. Please, check that out. Like, subscribe, click the bell on that. If you're interested, even if you're not, just go ahead and do it anyway. And then Mike's other page that he does with his wife, Chronosode Games. This is Mike and his wife playing video games. It's supposed to have been in chronological order, but now they're just playing random games, like the stupid trombone thing again. I say it's stupid. I know you say it's cool. Whatever, we're going to disagree until I play it, and then I'll be like, oh my God, this thing is amazing. But I probably won't play it, but still, whatever. Anyway, check those out. He also has a Twitch stream, right? Did I say that right?
Yes, this time? Twitch.
Please check that out too. Watch them play the games. And we don't mention it often enough on here. In fact, we very rarely even mention it. But we also have a Facebook page, as does Ruling Note Music and Chronosode Games. And we have a Twitter feed. The Twitter guy doesn't necessarily post as many things. But, I have a suggestion for us, Mike.
Huh, what's that?
Uh-oh. We can't play the music, obviously, again, for license rights. So we can't do videos or anything of the music. But maybe, just maybe, By the time this comes out, maybe we can take some pictures of our setup and a little bit of our collection and post those to our Twitter and Facebook page.
I wouldn't be against that. I think it'd be great. This,
they can check out the Xennial Chronicles on Facebook and on Twitter. It's the same name on both, or Zenkron. And you can check out again while you're looking at those, Ruling Note Music, Chronosode Games. Follow any of those on Facebook and on Twitter. And see what pictures we have posted of our setups. Mine's a little jankier than Mike's, but it'll also include my setup for, well, when I get my TV, which is another story, the next week's story. When I get my TV, it'll be in the space that's now just an open space. But you can see some of my my gaming collection as well as part of the pictures. And heck, I might even take pictures of some of the other miscellaneous Star Wars effects that are in this office of mine, just to give you an idea of where I sit when I'm working. Maybe we'll get some pictures of your office too.
Anyway, I'm going to have to do a lot of cleanup before that happens.
That's all right. They can see it. I mean, show them the real you, Mike. Show them the real you. I can't even tell you how many times when I was coming over there, when we were in the garage studio, I had to make sure that my chair had enough room and there wasn't a bunch of stuff on it.
Yep.
That's just, you and I would have fun if we had to share the same space for any length of time.
Oh, my God.
We did do that, and we did have fun.
We did have.
Did you ever put that bed together the entire time that you were there, or did it, the futon bed, or did you just have the mattress on the floor the whole time?
I think the futon bed is actually put together out there right now.
No. I'm talking when we lived together 20 some years ago.
Oh, dear God, no, I didn't. I was 20.
Yeah, it was just the mattress on the floor, wasn't it?
Yep.
Anyway, thank you all for listening, and we'll be back again next week.
You have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.